Thanks for listening to the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hello and welcome inside. Final hour this week of the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon.
I hate that song.
Maybe Luka Doncic didn't like the fact we were giving the MVP to Ja Morant tonight. He outplays Morant. And look, the Grizzlies were bound to cool off. They were playing their eighth game in as many nights. And they get blown out by the Mavs, 112-85. Still a decent night for Morant, 19 and 8 and 5 rebounds. But a triple-double from Luka Doncic, 27, 12 rebounds, 10 assists. And now suddenly Luka's better than Ja Morant. For the first time in 3 weeks, it's all now. Yes, now Luka's better. Like, no one would say stuff like that while Morant's on his tear. But now one game they play, and they finally lose after winning 11 in a row, and it's, oh, yeah, Luka's always better than Ja Morant. Let's just calm down with that. Let's just calm down.
You got to have hot takes at every turn. And when Luka's able to spend the final 6 minutes on the bench in his undershirt, and he's already removed the jersey, and he's coming out of timeouts and just dapping people up, you know, it's a powerful thing on a Friday night in a blowout win where he sits down. 32 minutes played, 27, 12, and 10. 0 for 6 from three-point range. It doesn't matter. They win going away as you had 7 guys in double figures in this one. So, yeah, look, it's the MVP talk, which means every week we have to insert a new name just to keep it fresh. So if LeBron James goes and has another couple of big games, we'll go, can he possibly win? Even though the Lakers ... right? And all the other hand-wringing conversations about Russell Westbrook and everything else move to the side for a moment. We'll talk about Kevin Durant. We'll get Giannis in, right? Because we haven't really used Giannis as an MVP candidate just yet.
No.
We had a lot of Steph, but we didn't do a lot of Giannis. And eventually people are going to say, well, look at what Giannis and the Bucks are doing.
No.
Right? We did a little last night.
We've seen it with Giannis. We've seen it with Steph. We've seen it with these guys.
Right.
Ja Morant is cutting through. Look, you're going to get your Luka if the Mavericks start winning a little bit more. You might get your Luka. But look, Morant's got Memphis at the top of the West. I mean, Memphis. Just think about that for a second. Ahead of the Lakers, ahead of the Clippers, ahead of everybody. They're at the top of the West. 11 in a row. There's nothing the guy can't do, but he's got the storyline. He's got the team playing well. He's got the highlights. He has everything you need. He has the utmost respect of everybody throughout the league. Yeah, could I see it coming down to Ja Morant and Luka Doncic? I can see that, but in the end, it's going to wind up being Ja Morant because they can anoint him a star.
Yeah. No, I certainly wasn't taking the award away from him. I'm just saying on that long, circuitous road to that point, we've got to talk about other guys at different points during the week, right?
Especially
once the NFL goes away and you start getting those Sunday afternoon games. I mean, that's going to be the opportunity in Saturday night games to showcase, you know, your stars. And while you will have a lot of jaw thrust into those spots, you know, you still have to week to week the MVP candidate because you got to sell that game, sell the hell out of it, and then hope the guy plays. That's really the back end of it. Wait, he's on a load management night? Damn it, I thought we covered this 4 years ago.
The Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. So we got more NBA on the way, but we are getting into what is going to be the first weekend of its kind in the National Football League with 6 games opening weekend. We got a Monday night game. There's 2 games tomorrow, 3 games Sunday. And you hit on it last night. It's kind of like a mini NFL weekend, except all the teams are good. Like, we don't have to worry about, hey, oh, yeah, what do we got? Well, we got Jets-Jaguars is one of the games. No, we got all good games. We got all good teams. It's great. You don't have to worry about any of these other ones coming up. No. We got all good games coming up
this
weekend.
Yeah. Yes, in theory.
You're going to spend more time in front of the TV watching NFL this weekend than you ever have before, because it's 3 days of playoffs and you got to watch every game, right? This is not the NBA where you can get to the playoffs and go, ah, I know there's just so many games every night. You know what? I'm done. I could just check it out. No, these are all games, especially because you're ending with the one that's probably the biggest toss-up, which is Arizona and the Rams. I mean, both those teams have issues. They're both struggling in different ways. This is where, okay, I need 6 hours on Saturday. I need 7.5 hours on Sunday, and I need 3.5 hours on Monday. So good luck trying to get stuff done the next 3 days. Not happening.
No, that's just it. You know, Friday night, while listening to us, really needed to be your productivity, especially because the two national games were dogs. Okay, they were absolute dogs with fleas because the Bulls were terrible. LaVine gets hurt. They get blown out. Steph's the only guy playing, and even his minutes are limited. You move on, right? Unless you're just the biggest Jordan Poole fan. I like him, but, you know, I would have if I wasn't working with you tonight, I'm sure I would have found a movie to watch. Maybe I would have gone and seen Scream. I don't know. But then the second game was competitive for a half, maybe 2.5 quarters, and then Dallas pulled away. It's like, all right, we're done. We're done with this, which means you could get a hell of a lot done today. If you needed to do laundry, do laundry. Needed to, you know, maybe clean the gutters, could have done that while listening to us. I mean, my voice can thrust you into great things on a Friday night into early Saturday morning, because eventually you're just saying, I'm not doing anything. And even if you go to your kid's game, what are you doing? Making sure that you got unlimited, you know, data, and you're watching the game on your phone while you're at a soccer match, while you're at a softball game, you know, lacrosse, whatever it is your kid's doing, you're going to be paying attention in the afternoon and evening hours to the NFL games. Don't lie to yourself.
Okay, but this is the weekend where you go, I need all this time. I'm sorry.
Well, but I'm saying if you didn't broker it in advance, because now it'd be a very hard turn. You know, maybe someone had plans. Maybe you know.
Well, that's your fault for making plans.
But maybe you agreed to something, just thinking, all right, it'll be okay. And by the time we get to Saturday, maybe there's supposed to be some inclement weather. Maybe the kid's got a science project you need to work on. Maybe you can volunteer to grill or something. I don't know. But you got to come up with an alternate plan.
I need 7 minutes for Wordle tomorrow, and I can fit that in any time between the games. It's going to be all good.
Yeah, you'll get that in plus 7 minutes to then taunt your friends and neighbors. Because if you're not doing that, you're wasting your time. Right? The whole point isn't just, oh, look at me, I got it in three moves. No, the point is, I got it in three moves, blank you. So if you're not doing the blank you part of it, you're really kind of wasting 7 minutes.
Yeah, so I wasted today because I did get it in three moves today. It's my first one. I got it in three moves. Yeah, I think I'm a dynasty. I think I could wind up being the Peyton Manning of Wordle. Like, hey, the number one pick in here. I can look at the career I have. I could wind up being that. You'll never know. But let us get to the games tomorrow. Two games tomorrow on Saturday. Do we see upsets in either of them? As I told you earlier this week, I could see all of the underdog teams winning. I see paths to victories for all of them.
$5 gets you $6,000 back. Yeah.
So you put $5, you bet all the underdogs. All right. So I get
money line, right?
I get just straight 3% of that. If you win, right? I get
3%
if you win.
You'll walk away with 3%. Cool. That's fine.
Okay. What's
well, minus whatever the equivalent taxes would be on that.
No, I'm not going to get into your pocket for taxes. What's 3% of six grand? $200? Is that what that is? I think it's $200.
No, I think it's 20.
No, 3%? No. Because then you're talking about you getting up at 10% is like $100.
You're getting $180. Yeah, you're getting $180.
Yeah, when you take it out for taxes. Okay, great. So 180 if it works. All right, great. I'm digging that. I'll be okay with that. So are we seeing upsets tomorrow? Game one, Cincinnati and the Raiders. Look, the Raiders are playing really well. It's been a four-game win streak. They are able to get the escape in one of the greatest NFL games ever on last Sunday night. They're going to get a bounce this week. And Cincinnati, not only have we spent a lot of time talking about offense and Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and just how great that offense is, but this is going to be where the Bengals' defense shows out, because there's been a lot of games this year where the Bengals have played big games, whether it was the Steelers or the Browns, and suddenly the Bengals' defense, you're like, whoa, this looks like a top-five unit. And after the game, they talk about it. They rise to the occasion. They don't do it every week, and their defense is not great. Their run defense is pretty good. But this is one of those weeks where, okay, we're going to stand up and imprint the game, and it's going to be tough sledding for the Raiders. I'm going to take Cincinnati 28-16. They move on to the next game in the playoffs.
Playing hard down the stretch. It'll be interesting to see if Rich Bisaccia is able to keep the job, right? A lot of folks want to say, hey, you got to have a rock star in there. Well, maybe quietly he is solidifying things. And Derek Carr, maybe you don't like him on the field as much, but leadership dragging this team along as he has. You know, Zay Jones had some opportunities. I know Lou on Twitter was pointing that out as well, as I did earlier in the show, of opportunities downfield. He's got to make those plays. Make those plays, and all of a sudden the pressure's on Burrow and this offense, you know, to get into a little bit of a track meet. Question is, can you do that? And I don't know that they'll be able to sustain, right, Joe Burrow on that offense. I am curious about his knee. There's no question about that, right? Missed the final week of the season. How much of that is, well, there's not much to play for versus, well, this is really something we need to hold him out for. So curious to see, but just too many weapons in that offense if things are clicking, no matter how much you may like a couple members of that Oakland defense. I'll take Cincinnati, and I'll take him to cover the 5.5.
Look at you putting him back in Oakland. Oh, that's
awesome.
Did
I put him in Oakland?
You put him in Oakland. Yeah, you did. You and Mike Tomlin, you're putting him back in Oakland.
It's where they belong. They will always be the Oakland Raiders to me. The O.co will live forever.
What about Buffalo and New England? New England peaked. Their game against the Bills, where they won by throwing the football three times, that was the peak of Belichick and this year's New England Patriots. Clearly, Belichick could be setting us up for this game. Like, he could have thrown the ball three times, knowing full well, being eight steps ahead, we're going to play the Bills again in the playoffs, and then we're not going to show them what they want to see, and we're going to give them something different. I hear you on that, but the Patriots have not been playing well. Since that game, they've had one game where they played well. That was the Jaguars. The Jaguars are awful, despite their win over the Colts the final week of the regular season. They peaked a few weeks ago. Buffalo was just too good across the board. And they had a get-well game last week against the Jets. They're a confidence team. When the Bills are playing with confidence, they're really, really difficult to beat. And it's not that just that they're the better team all around. It's that their holes, they have figured out a bit. Can the Patriots score enough with the Bills? Well, the Bills say, can we run the ball enough? And they have now figured out that Devin Singletary is going to be their guy. Look, they went back and forth all season. It was Zach Moss, and he was inactive. It was Matt Breida, and now, okay, it's Devin Singletary. They don't need him to run for 150 yards, but if he runs for 80, 85 yards, that's it. So give me the Buffalo Bills over the Patriots, 24-16. It's going to be close for a little while. Josh Allen leads the Bills on a couple of drives, and the Bills win this. They move on to the next playoff game.
Yeah, I got the Bills with a 7-point victory here into the mid-20s, which is much higher than what the temperature will be. Game time temperature feeling like, you know, one of those great things from the Midwest and East Coast. It's 4 degrees, but it feels like -5 or worse. So that'll be the curiosity. Remember back in that game, the first meeting, right, the cold game, 46 runs. Well, they would have thrown the ball if they had to. You know, Stephon Diggs or Dawson Knox would have actually caught something when Josh Allen put it up, because it would have changed the complexion of that game. And in what was a defensive battle, second time they're in Foxborough, Josh Allen has his 314, three scores, returned to form. Here, I don't expect necessarily that much ease, but for the longest time, you mentioned Singletary now coming down to stretch, his scoring streak and all. The fact is, you also have Josh Allen, and in the run game has been much more of a weapon the second half of the season. So expecting more of that, as long as McDermott and all the offensive staff don't do anything dopey in trying to call those wide receiver passes in his general direction. Don't do it. You need him. As much as I like Mitchell Trubisky, yes, obligatory hourly Mitchell Trubisky reference. As much as I like him, Josh Allen is the guy that gets you there if you're gonna make a run here to Los Angeles and Bills Mafia and their tables to show up out here at SoFi. So I'm looking for them to put up some points. For Mac Jones, might you be able to pick on the fact that White's not in the secondary and make a play or two with Kendrick Bourne? Sure. But that's not been the bread and and butter. It's Stevenson, it's Harris, and the run game and picking your spots. So I'll take the Bills to win the third round of this battle.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Time to drink velvet right now. Get a good gulp. Drink that velvet down. Hey, happy 28th anniversary to the second best Simpsons episode ever, as it was 28 years ago tonight, Mike Harmon. The ring came off of Chief Wiggum's pudding can, and Marge versus the Monorail debuted on Fox.
Bleep,
Monorail.
Beep, beep, beep. Monorail.
Monorail. Monorail.
Well, I just love the tweet from the writers saying, you know, happy anniversary to everybody but Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, I mean, all
the
best
the
episodes.
But, you know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yes, Cape Fear is the best Simpsons episode. I will fight you all on this. But, yes, 28 years ago today, Marge versus the Monorail.
D, bar, D.
'm about a fresca. Mike, it's Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Joining us now on the hotline, a man who I think back in when this debuted in 1993 said, "The Simpsons is never going to last, and I'll give you odds on it." It is our insider in Las Vegas, Todd Furman. You can follow him on Twitter, at Todd Furman. That is at Todd Furman, a former odds maker turned co-founder of the Bet the Board podcast. He is a Vegas analyst for CBS Sports HQ. Todd, what's happening, buddy?
Not a whole heck of a lot this evening, gentlemen. Just looking forward to six glorious playoff games kicking off in earnest tomorrow with our local boys putting their Herculean efforts on the line in Cincinnati.
Yeah, how are you not at like some big Raiders party tonight, right? I mean, this is it, man. They're in the playoffs. It's Vegas. I thought you'd be at some like rager that's going to go all the way until game time.
Smith, I don't think I mesh with most of that Raiders Nation faithful, so I tend to watch most of their games from a safe distance. But given the fact that I probably won't have an investment on the game, I definitely will find myself kind of pulling, whether it's subconsciously or not, for the Raiders to see if they can keep this Cinderella story going, although it will be no easy task against this Bengals offense led by a ton of talented skill position players.
Is there something in particular that makes you stand back and leave the 5.5 alone?
I think it's just the situation more than anything else. You wonder about the Raiders and what they have left in the tank after playing into the wee hours of the night on Sunday. You're talking about a short week traveling across the country. And this is a team that's really been in playoff mode for the better part of a month. You've now won your last four games by a grand total of 12 points. Three of those games have been decided with game-winning field goals coming off the leg of Daniel Carlson. And you wonder if just getting to the playoffs is enough for them, and that's where they have the collective sigh of relief, or they still adopt the us-against-the-world mentality and can carry some of that momentum going forward. Obviously, the matchup to watch will be Max Crosby against that Bengals offensive line that's been a glorified disaster for better stretches this season. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what Derek Carr can do playing in cold weather, the kind of conditions where he hasn't exactly thrived during his illustrious NFL career.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but Storm Norton's actually going to play right tackle for the Bengals, so it could wind up tilting the field a little bit.
You know, Storm Norton might actually be an upgrade for what Cincinnati's going to have to go to battle with against Max Crosby. When you consider the first time around, Crosby had a pass rush win rate north of 61.5%. That was more than double what he was able to produce in any other game this season. So if the Bengals aren't keeping a tight end to chip Crosby off the line, they're doing a huge disservice to their franchise quarterback.
All right,
second.
Go ahead, Jason. I defer to you.
Oh, all right. So the Jets have Buffalo and New England. I get people want to see New England pull the upset here, but I think they peaked a few weeks ago. Buffalo is just too good for me at this point. They had the get well game last week. What do you like in this one?
Yeah, I would tend to agree. When you look at Buffalo, a lot more dynamic on both sides of the ball, in my opinion. Sure, there are questions in this Bills secondary. We haven't seen them really have to step up in class without the likes of Tre'Davious White, but New England's not the high-flying passing attack that I think will be really able to exploit the Bills' lack of having a true number one corner. Josh Allen playing in his own building with what will be a raucous crowd in a full stadium, something that the Bills weren't able to use to their advantage last year, I think will be a little bit of a daunting atmosphere for Mac Jones and a Patriots Patriots team, to your point, Smith, talking about them peaking early. This defense has shown some vulnerability in recent weeks. I'm not quite sure if the running game finds itself struggling to get on track. They can do enough through the air. And I think the best way for Buffalo to really test this New England offense isn't necessarily with their stop unit, but it's letting Josh Allen go out there with an uber-aggressive game plan early and hoping that game script forces New England to be a little bit more balanced than just handing the ball off to Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson for 45 to 50 times.
Fox Sports Radio, Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon here, joining us on the hotline as he does each and every week live and in living color from Las Vegas, our buddy Todd Furman. At Todd Furman on Twitter, you got to download the Bet the Board podcast. We get a few minutes of Todd's time each week, but in-depth analysis. What the latest one's about 90 minutes on the at Bet the Board pod to download that, Todd, as you guys break down every angle possible in these games.
Yeah, we tried to do at least 12 to 15 minutes on five of the six games. We gave the Steelers and Chiefs about 37 seconds. We felt that was about all it deserved, given Big Ben's comments leading into it. And more importantly, we get some fresh perspective as well from John Sheeran, who heads up the risk management team at FanDuel Sportsbook. He adds some invaluable perspective about who the books will need for the weekend and how they've gone about setting some of their numbers in terms of shaping the market. So should be six magnificent games, at least on paper. And the fact that we have these games, you know, going Saturday, Sunday into Monday night means record-setting betting handles should be on the horizon.
Okay, so well, before we jump into those other three games, let's give the 37 seconds on Pittsburgh and KC with Roethlisberger saying, hey, we're just happy to be here. For me, it's the every play that you ever wanted to run, like out of Henry Winkler's playbook in The Waterboy, this is what you trot out if you're the Steelers. Just throw it all up against the wall.
Oh, 100%. In a game like this, I mean, you're running end-arounds, you're running, you know, wide receiver passes, you're trying to see if Antoine Randall-El is out there somewhere that he can come back and maybe be under center for a snap. I think you could see the icebox out there with the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Nicely done.
All bets are off in terms of the way the Steelers need to go about attacking Kansas City. And sometimes that underdog mentality can pay dividends because there is no pressure on either the Steelers' offense or the defense, especially in Big Ben's swan song. And when you look at Kansas City, if things start off a little bit sluggish for this team and they can't find separation, every passing minute that the Steelers are able to stay within one score, I think gets to be a lot more stressful situation for Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, and this Kansas City offense. So we'll see what the Steelers have in store. It can't be any worse than what we saw at Arrowhead a few weeks ago.
Listen, they could run like 80 plays of offense for like 79 yards, control the clock for 58 minutes, and win the game. That's all
there is a
do,
distinct
Tom.
Possibility if the Steelers can find a way to put together a 19-play march that takes 11 minutes off the clock and only covers 36 yards, they'll find a way to do it. But the craziest part about that, Smith, is they'll do it all with a passing attack that averages 2.6 yards per attempt, so it'll defy any previous precedent that's been set in an NFL football game.
Have you ever seen anything like the – I mean, we talk about shot charts in the NBA. You ever seen anything like the spray pattern of a Ben Roethlisberger passing chart?
Hey, I mean, it's tough to go 24 for 46 and throw for less than 130 yards in a game your team wins by double digits like they did against the Cleveland Browns. And we thought that was going to be the crowning achievement for Big Ben. Never in our wildest dreams did we think the Steelers could find a way to get into the postseason. But at the same time, you did have the Chargers in their elimination game against the Raiders go 19 plays for a shade more than 2 minutes off the clock, go the length of the field and actually turn into a touchdown. Just wasn't enough to get them into the postseason, much to Mr. Frostberg's chagrin, I'd imagine.
Our insider in Vegas, Todd Furman, our guest here right now, Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon. All right, I'm out on a limb. I'm going to take the points, but I like them on the field for the upset. I know it sounds crazy. You're going to say, Smith, you're always crazy. What do you think? Eagles beating the Bucks? I mean, 8.5, but also winning on the field.
You know, I really don't think it's that outlandish. And the reason I say that is because Mother Nature may give the Philadelphia Eagles the helping hand they need to level the playing field here. When you look at Philadelphia, it's the most run-heavy offense in the entire league and matched up against the pass-happiest offense in the form of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. One team clearly will be better suited to navigate through 25-mile-an-hour winds and potentially sideways rain, which is why you've seen this total go from 49.5 down to 45.5. And anytime there's sloppy conditions, that becomes becomes the great equalizer. So if Philadelphia is able to generate pressure with their front four, get Tom Brady off his spot, we'll see what the chemistry and rapport looks like for some of those secondary options, not named Rob Gronkowski and Mike Evans. And the other storyline to keep tabs on, the Buccaneers don't sound ultra optimistic that Leonard Fournette's going to be 100% for this game. And Bruce Arians has said if he can't handle a full workload, he won't be out there. That could be a major blow, knowing that they need to try and establish a ground game to keep this Philly defense honest.
Yeah, with Ronald Jones already ruled out as well. All right, San Francisco, Dallas. Dallas, the narrow field goal favorites in this one. The 49ers, you know, I've been banging the drum because I put them on our laminated sheet to get to the Super Bowl before the season. That's just crazy, but I have to stay with it. But it became the popular pick all week long, Todd. Can Dak Prescott and company fend off, or does Mike McCarthy get sent into the good night after this one?
Yeah, I mean, this is a Dallas team that's extremely talented, and I think their defense is a little bit underrated. That unit's actually been more consistent over the last 5 or 6 weeks than some of the erratic play we've seen from the Cowboys offensively. We'll see what kind of absence Michael Gallup creates for this Cowboys offensive attack. Can Cedric Wilson slot nicely in there as the third receiver behind Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb? Let's see how the workload is distributed between Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. But I'd have no problem making a case for the 49ers, trendy or not, being a very live underdog here. What they want to do matches up well against a slightly undersized Cowboys defensive line that's better suited to get after the passer. Trent Williams being healthy is massive for the 49ers, knowing that Deebo Samuel and Elijah Mitchell are going to get a steady workload of carries in this spot. I think Jimmy Garoppolo showed us an awful lot leading the 49ers back against the Rams in that second half. And this is another team playing with a bit of house money. While you have questions about their secondary, and rightfully so, that's the reason that they're a 3-point underdog in the betting market. I make this game closer to pick 'em, so I think there's a ton of value, which is rare to say in some of these playoff games, in backing San Francisco win or lose.
See, but here's the thing, Todd, is that everybody doesn't understand how to break down the Cowboys, right? It's always, boy, are the Cowboys good or are the Cowboys not, right? Do I believe in the Cowboys? Do I not? They're so maddening. Everybody's got it wrong. You just have to figure out the weeks to believe in the Cowboys and the weeks that you know the Cowboys are going to lose. When it looks great for the Cowboys, that's when they lose. When there's a lot of questions, that's when they come out with a big effort. And they're questioned right now. They're playing at home. They're going to be able to run the football on San Francisco. This is the week to pick the Cowboys. It may not be next week, because then it's going to be, oh, the Cowboys are feeling good. Oh, Dak Prescott threw four. No, but this is the week, because the Cowboys have had a difficult time handling success. And this is one of those weeks where many people don't think they're going to win. It's a kind of rally week for Dallas. They're playing at home. Their offense is just going to wind up being too good for them over the course of four quarters. I can't believe in Jimmy Garoppolo. That's why I think this is the week for the Dallas Cowboys. Maybe the only one, but this is the week.
You know, if Dallas is able to pull off a win, I think whoever comes out of this game victorious, assuming seeds hold and has a chance to go to Lambeau, will give Green Bay all they can handle and then some. So I think it sets up for a very fascinating matchup. I think both these teams are dangerous outs, and whoever's able to build a little bit of confidence and get that train rolling forward, I think becomes a team that definitely bears watching in the NFC playoff picture.
Finally, Monday Night Football. The Arizona Cardinals coming to SoFi with all their fans. Kelly Stafford already saying, please don't sell your tickets to those people. There's plenty available at face via many a website. But for Matthew Stafford and company, the questions abound, but a banged-up Arizona squad. The fact that James Conner is still on the list as a game-time decision worries me. What say you?
Yeah, I think it's a big problem if Arizona can have a balanced attack and lean on the likes of a Chase Edmonds and James Conner, forcing Kyler Murray to win this game entirely with his arm, knowing that Arizona defensively has really been a well below average unit, and that's the main reason that's contributed to this team starting the season 7-0 and limping to the finish just 4-6 over their final 10 games. I think it's a bit of a coaching mismatch as well between Sean McVay and Cliff Kingsbury. When you look at the Rams team, they're going to commit to running the football, whether it's Daryl Henderson, Cam Akers, or Sony Michel being the primary bell cow. You know they're going to try and run to look to set up the pass. I think Arizona will struggle to contain Cooper Kupp, despite them having better success against Kupp way early in the season than any team did this year. But I think this Rams defense was embarrassed in that second half against the San Francisco 49ers. They'll be better here, and I actually lean under the total in this game. Would lean slightly towards Arizona, but I do think this total is a touch high at 49.5.
He's on Twitter at Todd Furman. That is at Todd Furman. Check out the Bet the Board podcast, all his work at CBS Sports HQ. Todd, as always, enjoy the night, enjoy the games, enjoy the Raiders. We'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. You guys do the same this weekend. And go Jets, Smith. I don't want you to get too stressed out watching their high-stakes playoff game this weekend. Oh,
thanks. I appreciate that, buddy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fox Sports Radio, it is the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Yo.
Thanks to Todd Furman for stopping by. All the inside news from Vegas. We've picked all the games, given you all our selections. Now time for a couple minutes on a couple of other selections from today. As the All-Pro teams came out today, and first team All-Pro, to no one's surprise, led by Jets kick returner Braxton Berrios, clearly earning his job.
That was by far the one I just had in ink.
Yeah,
there's
listen,
no question about it.
We got All-Pro guys, you know, just because you didn't have any first-teamers and the Chargers didn't have first-teamers. Listen, the Jets, look, the era of good feeling of the Jets is here. We have an All-Pro.
Yeah, Chargers were the couple members of that offensive line, Lindsley, and of course Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern, second team All Pro. The Bears had three second team All Pro. I got a guy I want to talk about in a minute.
Yeah, but that's that's like going to the Pro Bowl. Your first team All Pro or not? Your first or your last in this? Because now you're talking second team All Pro. There, you're talking about being a Pro Bowler.
Well, because I have a question. No, I don't think that's
the
case at all.
The best.
There's two teams. Right?
I mean, doesn't matter. Team one. Team one. That's what it is. Team one.
Well, because I want to talk about the guy on second team that is next to your guy, Berrios, in a minute. But let's go. Let's talk pro. All
right. You want to talk about all-time excellence. And we get caught up on quarterbacks a lot because we see Brady and Aaron Rodgers and what they're able to do. But just for a second, there's two other positions where we are seeing the best ever to play at their position. Number one is not somebody you think about a lot, but Justin Tucker is the best kicker in the history of the game. There's been no one who has been able to kick at the level he has been at for his career. The guy is 48 out of 66 for his career from 50 or more yards. All right, the guy is almost automatic from plus 50 yards. Guys just don't do that. The kicks he's made to win games, he is as automatic as they come. He could be kicking the ball from his house, then have to kick it over the stadium, have to bounce it at midfield, and it bounce into the goal, and he would wind up doing it. He has that kind of confidence because he is just that good. Yes, Vinatieri's made clutch kicks we talk about. Gostkowski has made clutch kicks in the playoffs. Nobody's better than Justin Tucker. You're seeing the best kicker in the history of the game right now.
No, he's been absolutely amazing. Steady as they go, and we bridge the fantasy and reality because sometimes you need a Ronco set it and forget it kind of moment. With Justin Tucker, week to week, you know the way the Ravens structure their squad. Very rarely are you going to go a week without at least two field goal attempts out of him, and certainly the super toe effect has been there. It's him and Matt Prater are the two guys. Like, all right, we're going to trot him out no matter where it is on the field. Shades of Sebastian Janikowski so long ago, where it looked like you had someone literally playing super toe and slamming him on his head to see how far that leg could extend to make a kick.
The other guy that we're going to come down to a conversation of, the greatest defensive player of all time in the NFL, the debate's going to come down to Lawrence Taylor or Aaron Donald, who makes his seventh All-Pro team. Not many guys make – when you make three, you're going to the Hall of Fame. This is his seventh. And do you think he's going to make a couple more before it's all said and done? Of course it is. Just like Lawrence Taylor changed the game from what he was able to do as an outside linebacker, Aaron Donald changing the game for what he can do in the middle of a defensive line, be able to stop the run, get pressure on quarterbacks. By the time it's all said, it's going to be who is the best defensive player ever. Because you can get back before LT and, oh, you're into Dick Butkus and guys like that. But the modern era, what we've all seen, it's going to be LT or Aaron Donald. That's going to be the debate.
Just two away from 100 career sacks. I want to throw up Matthew Slater, who made the second team. So in his career, three-time Super Bowl, 10-time Pro Bowl, five times either first or second team All-Pro. Another guy that we're talking about is one of the all-time greats. Once upon a time, a wide receiver, but found his niche and a hell of a career.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. So there you go. There is your All-Pro list of teams, the all-time greatness we are seeing. Our Best of podcast goes up in a few minutes on iTunes. You can use the iHeartRadio app wherever you listen to podcasts. It is there. Subscribe, rate us. We'll love you forever and ever and ever. For Mike, I'm Jason. Enjoy the games. Brian Noe coming up next. This is Fox Sports Radio.